You're listening to Sky Women's Health Podcast, your evidence-based resource for women's health and wellness, exploring the holistic principles of osteopathy, integrating mind, body, and spirit, designed to empower you as your own healthcare advocate and help you live your best life. I'm your host, board-certified OBGYN, Dr. Carolyn Moyers. Welcome, welcome, Sky community. Welcome back to another episode of Sky Women's Health. Today, we have with us a special guest, Dr. Becky Lynn, who is the founder and CEO of Evora Health. Becky, why don't you tell us where you are in the world and kind of introduce yourself in more detail?
Sure. So I am the CEO and founder of Evora Women's Health. We are a concierge health practice located in St. Louis. I'm an OBGYN by training. And I specialize in menopause and perimenopause, sexual health, and weight loss. So I am North American Menopause Society certified, which, well, it's actually now the Menopause Society instead of North American. And I am also board certified in obesity medicine. Our practice really focuses on holistic healthcare, meaning the whole person. So I like to jokingly say I'm not a drive-by pap smear breast exam. Like, we take time with our patients and get to cover everything from nutrition and exercise, mental health and sleep, to all things perimenopause, menopause, sexual health, and weight loss. So yeah,
a woman after my own heart. Which I think that's what we met at ISHWISH a couple of years ago, which is the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health. We met at their annual meeting, and you were a couple of years ahead of me in your journey in developing your practice. And so definitely intrigued and like a big sister, I'm looking up to you and learning from you. So,
well, okay.
I love taking care of the whole woman, and really just when they come in and get really focused on something, it's okay, let's take a big picture look at this. And so we know that weight changes and or body distribution changes, our body composition, our metabolism changes as we enter perimenopause and menopause. And it is very upsetting to women. We are very focused on, you know, that body image that makes us incredibly uncomfortable, then particularly infects, you know, how we show up for sex and our sexual desire in many ways. Right. And so with you being obesity medicine certified, I think that that would be a really great place for us to focus today.
Sure. Yeah, no, I did regular GYN for so many years, and so many times in my regular GYN practice, because I was in an employed physician for 20 years in academic medicine, and I never had the time to learn much about obesity and weight loss apart from exercise more, eat less. And now that I've gone and gotten educated and gotten board certified, I realize that it is not that simple, and that eating less, exercising more does not work for everyone. And I feel like perimenopausal and menopausal women, you know, this is the point in time where they might say, oh, you know, I might gain a few pounds, but when I was younger, I could just adjust my diet a little bit and it would come off, or I could exercise a little bit more and it would come off. But when you get into your 40s and 50s, those things that you did before don't seem to work anymore. And it's so frustrating.
Absolutely. And we hear it every day in the office. I'm doing all the things that I used to do, but it doesn't work.
Right, right. And there are a variety of reasons that that happens. One of the main reasons is that as we age, we lose muscle naturally. And muscle burns more calories than fat at rest. So if you look at a muscular person, they're going to have a faster metabolism. Mm-hmm. They're going to have a higher metabolic rate. So even when they're sleeping, they're burning more calories, just maintaining their body. And so as we age, we naturally lose muscle mass into our 40s and 50s as our testosterone levels go down, mm-hmm. as our estrogen levels go down. We just don't maintain that muscle mass like we used to. So like, you might have been able to eat 2,500 calories when you were 25, and you might lose weight on that. But now at 45 or 50, you might gain weight on that. And then the other thing I want to say about that is, you know, I grew up in the era of Jane Fonda. Everyone was about cardio, aerobics, burn calories. But actually, if you're a, you know, busy working professional or mom, and you have limited time and you're trying to lose weight, strength training is really where it's at to maintain that muscle mass.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always remind patients, it doesn't have to be difficult. It doesn't have to be a gym membership or a trainer. Now, that's great if you need the motivation and the accountability for sure.
Yes.
But if you have some self-motivation, it can be the Peloton app or Fit On, which is a free app on your phone. And you can pick your exercise for the day, and it can be body weight exercise. There's so many ways to get it. It doesn't have to be difficult.
Right. And so I see that in my patients. Sometimes they'll say, "Oh, but I don't have an hour to work out." I'm like, "You don't need an hour. 5 minutes is better than nothing. 10 minutes
Agree.
is better than nothing." And I
Plus,
just,
it boosts endorphins and improves your
yes.
mood. Yeah.
Seriously, like honestly, this is an aside, but like if you stand up and do jumping jacks during a commercial, it is enough to like make you feel good and like boost your mood a little bit, like even just a little tiny bit. But sometimes I say just put those weights by the toilet. And while you're sitting there, just you could be using your arms and you have no
Don't
excuse
scroll on your
why
phone.
you're standing. Yeah, don't scroll on your phone. Lift your weights, you know, because we all have to sit on the toilet at some point in the day. So you might as well make it worthwhile.
Okay, so improving your or quality movement over quantity is what I'm hearing.
Yes. Yeah. And strength training. So that for those perimenopausal 40s, 50s, strength training is really, really, really important. Definitely. Cardio is great. Cardio is super important too. It's good for your heart. Cardio is really important for your brain because it builds healthy blood vessels, which lowers your risk of dementia and Parkinson's and Alzheimer's in the future. So I'm not trying to downplay cardio, but if you're really focusing on weight loss and you have limited time, make sure you get your strength training in.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And then, of course, diet, because we can out eat in any exercise plan. So let's talk
Yes,
about
this is
diet.
true. Yeah. So the way to lose weight is you have to have an energy deficit. So yes, it's true. You have to be taking in fewer calories than you're burning. We typically shoot for about a 500 calorie deficit. In my office, we have a breathing machine, which will measure your resting metabolic rate. It's actually indirect calorimetry. I love it because instead of using an equation, a sort of one size fits all equation, this actually measures oxygen in and carbon dioxide out, measures cellular respiration to give us an idea of what your resting metabolic rate is. So, how many calories you burn in a day just living. And then we can use that to calculate, the total number of calories that you need in a day because you don't want to restrict too much. Because if you
Right.
really restrict, then your metabolism says, "Hey, she's starving me. We're going to really shut down." But you
Right.
don't want to eat too much that you don't lose weight. And then, of course, in my practice, we have two dietitians that work with me, and they are amazing. And they'll take that total number of calories, they'll break it down into percentage of protein, carbs, fats. And there's a big focus on protein. It doesn't mean that we don't recommend carbs. Not all carbs are bad. Some carbs are bad. Some carbs are good. You do need carbs.
Right.
But when you're losing weight and you're operating on this caloric deficit, your body's going to break down fat cells for fuel, but it's also going to break down muscle for fuel. And so the two ways that you want to prevent or lessen that breakdown of muscle is strength training, like we talked about, but also you need to get enough protein in your diet. So I usually, depending on the person, approximately 30 grams of protein at each meal, which I think in the American diet is kind of hard to get. You know, we are so carb heavy, we're so processed heavy. I focus a lot on whole foods, less processed,
Yes.
low sugar. But definitely when you're losing weight, you want to make sure that you're giving your body enough protein so you don't lose that muscle mass.
Agree. I agree completely. Okay, and so then when we're doing the correct exercise and diet, and we're maybe not seeing that effect, or we have chronic obesity, where do we go? What medications are available? What are the risks? What do we need to consider?
Yeah. So before I talk about the medicines, one other thing I wanted to mention that I think is really important in the perimenopause, menopause space is insulin resistance.
Yes.
So, this is what insulin resistance is. So, If you don't have insulin, this is how your body naturally works. You eat food, goes to your stomach, it gets broken down to glucose, which is just sugar. It gets absorbed into your bloodstream, and then your pancreas makes insulin that moves the glucose from the bloodstream into the cells to use for fuel. And for whatever reason, whether it's weight gain or can be partially genetic, people can develop insulin resistance where their insulin doesn't work as well. And so then their body has to pump out more insulin. So they have high insulin levels as your body's trying to move that glucose from the bloodstream into the cells. But those high insulin levels make it really hard to break down fat to use for fuel and really easy to deposit fat. Now, you might go and get your labs drawn and you're not a diabetic. You're not even a pre-diabetic. Your glucose is normal, but having that insulin resistance can lead to weight gain. And the more weight you gain, the more insulin resistant you become until you eventually do become a pre-diabetic. Your insulin levels can't keep up to maintain your glucose at a good level. And then you gain more weight and then you eventually become diabetic. So like one of my frustrations is I might see a woman who's like, yeah, they told me I was pre-diabetic, but there's nothing really to do about it. Oh no, there's plenty to do about it. Like, I feel like just eat less sugar isn't the answer. Like if you're a pre-diabetic, you're sort of in a situation that's going to set you up to gain weight to ultimately become a diabetic. So it's better to like lose weight now, take care of it now. Exercise improves insulin sensitivity. There are medicines that improve insulin sensitivity. So I feel like it's really important to treat and manage pre-diabetes as much as it's as important as managing diabetes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why it's so important to take that holistic approach when we look at women. You know, if somebody wants to start a weight loss plan with me, we're going to do all of our labs first. We're going to make sure everything is up to date, that we've had that counseling session, that we know what lifestyle things we need to implement, because I'm not going to do medications alone. And pre-diabetes is part of that. You know, if I see somebody who's at the cusp of being a pre-diabetic, like, you know, no, you're not a pre-diabetic, but you're at 5.6 and anything over that is considered pre-diabetes, you know, we're going to be proactive now. One of the things I love to do with my patients is to have them wear a continuous glucose monitor because it helps them to edit their diet so much better because they're seeing real time, like, oh, this is how it impacts me.
Yes, I use that a lot of times with my patients too, because it's really important if you're a pre-diabetic or you're, you know, you want to keep your glucose from getting so high that it forces your body to pump out a lot of insulin. Yeah. And so that is one amazing way, because everybody responds differently. Their blood sugar responds differently to the foods that they eat. So, you know, somebody might eat white rice and their sugar goes sky high, and somebody else might not eat, you know, might not go as high with the white rice. The other trick that I think is really important when it comes to maintaining your blood sugar is if you're going to eat, you want to choose your protein first and then your carbohydrate, because your blood sugar doesn't rise as high. Even if you ate the two exact same things, if you eat the carbohydrate first, your blood sugar will go higher. So I think about like when you go out to dinner and you might get a glass of wine and they bring you bread. Like, they should just bring you your steak first.
Yeah.
I mean, I shouldn't like be focusing on steak. We should focus on fish and lean meats.
Yeah. But I get what you're saying. You need your protein first.
Get the steak first and then get your...
Have the wine and bread last.
Yeah, exactly. That should be your dessert.
Okay. And so let's talk about how you like to manage insulin resistance. Obviously, we talked about exercise. We talked about dietary changes.
Yeah. So there's also medicines, and there, I feel like I have pretty much two main go-tos to manage insulin resistance. And it really depends on the patient's focus, how much weight they have to lose, their budget, their insurance coverage.
Sure.
I would say the majority of people that I see have, you know, they have weight to lose. They might be in the obese range where they have obesity, or they might be in the overweight range, but if you have a comorbid condition like high blood pressure or high cholesterol or sleep apnea, or any of those conditions that are related to obesity, they meet criteria for weight loss medicines too. And I'm talking about like the GLP-1s, which are very famous now. It's funny how it's changed since I started doing this. But the GLP-1s are things like Ozempic, Wegovy, Saxenda, Victoza, Mounjaro, and Zepbound.
And can we just clarify that these are not new drugs?
No. I mean, Mounjaro and Zepbound are new, but Ozempic has been around for many years. Same with Victoza. So they're not new and terrifying. Mounjaro is the newest one, and it works similarly to Wegovy and Ozempic, but it's kind of two for the price of one. So Mounjaro is FDA approved for diabetes. It's called the generic name is tirzepatide. It's also called Zepbound, same exact medicine. It's just FDA approved for weight loss, and it works like the hormone GLP in your brain to make you feel full, but it also works like the hormone GIP. And that also makes you feel full. And that's what sets it apart from Ozempic and Wegovy, which are the same molecule.
Okay, so those are kind of your two class of drugs that you go to. Or
So,
you
well,
wait,
I
no,
think,
you just mentioned one, your
yeah, so
GLP-1s. Yeah.
the other thing would be metformin. So, metformin is an insulin sensitizer. It's FDA approved for diabetes. It's not a weight loss drug. Sometimes it does help people lose weight by making their insulin work better, by improving that insulin resistance. So, sometimes it leads to weight loss, but not always. So, if someone has obesity or has overweight plus the chronic condition, the real better choice for weight loss is really a GLP-1. The big hurdle is insurance coverage.
Yeah. Okay. Which lends to, I mean, both of them could potentially lend to weight loss.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
But the amount of weight loss with the GLP-1 is going to be significantly higher than metformin.
Okay. And with metformin, a lot of times the limiting use is GI distress. Do you find that using the extended release kind of helps with that?
Yeah, that can definitely help. I find that like some people tolerate metformin just fine, and other people, it is just not going to work for them. And I find that with the GLP-2s, the GLP-1s also,
Yes.
they have GI side effects. Like nausea is the
Right.
main side effect. Constipation is probably the second most common thing or that I see. And sometimes it's bad enough, people will stop it, the nausea and the constipation. But everybody's different. Some people tolerate it perfectly. Other people feel horrible and can't tolerate it.
Yeah. I find that most people tolerate it fairly well. My concern is when they keep titrating up, because some people lose weight on very little.
So I don't automatically titrate up with Mounjaro, because if you're losing a good amount of weight, I don't feel the need to titrate up because you can overdo it on those medicines, like where people just don't want to eat anything. And that's not healthy either.
Right, because then you're going to lose muscle
Vitamin
mass. Yeah.
deficiency. Yeah,
Yeah.
muscle mass, vitamin deficiencies, hair loss. I mean, so I feel like we sort of, we've been fighting an obesity epidemic for so long. Now we have something that works almost too well for some people. It's amazing. Like you never would have thought that for so many years, the weight loss medications that we had to help people really didn't help that much. And so now we have something that almost works too well. So I do spend a lot of time finding out what people ate, making sure they're eating enough. You
Yeah.
know, it's crazy, but they are
So
game changers.
who are those people who can't take semaglutide? Let's address that.
Yeah. So anybody who has a personal or a family history of medullary thyroid cancer or multiple endocrine neoplasia cannot take them because these medicines cause that in rats, not in humans, but there is a black box warning. Or someone who's got a history of pancreatitis, I wouldn't do it either because there is a small increased risk of pancreatitis with GLP-1s also.
Right. Okay. Perfect. Okay. And so what is your next step? We've addressed insulin resistance, which these also are, can function in helping to reduce weight. What else?
Well, I think the last part of weight loss that I think is truly important for some people more than others is behavioral changes.
Yeah.
We have two motivational coaches here because we all eat for reasons besides hunger, whether it's stress, whether it's sort of night eating and boredom, or you're just used to snacking in front of the TV. Like, and I find those are really difficult. Those habits are hard to break.
Yeah.
And sometimes using that GLP-1 is just enough to help you break the bad habit. So
Yeah.
Our coaches focus a lot on helping people manage stress, not through food, avoiding binging, avoiding night eating. So behavioral changes are really, really key to weight loss also. And those are hard to break, those old habits.
Yeah, absolutely. But I do find that with semaglutide, it is enough that you just, the mindless eating isn't necessary. It just doesn't even cross, you know, your path. You're just like not interested. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, I can think of two patients this week who each had lost almost 20 pounds and they took very differing approaches. You know, one who's doing the lifestyle modification with semaglutide, the other one hired a health coach and is working on her nutrition and lifestyle with that, you know, direction and accountability. So one, you know, both using the behavioral modifications. One had the coach, the other one used the medication, and they're getting almost exact results. But every body is unique. And so it really takes that personalized approach.
It does. And, you know, there are many people out there that, you know, diet, exercise, and even, you know, a personal trainer or accountability coach is not going to work for them. And obesity has been a struggle their entire lives. And, you know, we know that obesity is a chronic disease. And fat cells make hormones that keep you fat. And so, yes, for some people, just, you know, the diet, exercise, and accountability coach is going to work for them. But for other people, that's not going to work. So the good news is we have options and we have tools. Medications are not for everybody, but some people can definitely benefit tremendously from the medicines and the options that we have.
Yeah. Now, I didn't hear you mention phentermine, and some patients come requesting that. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. So I do prescribe phentermine from time to time. I think it works well, and it's cheap. And the issues that I see with phentermine, and I think it's a fine medication, but sometimes we can't use it. If somebody has uncontrolled hypertension or they have, you know, heart disease, then you don't want to use phentermine. And so and the amount of weight in the clinical trials that people lost on phentermine was significantly less than on Mounjaro and Wegovy, Ozempic, semaglutide. But it's cheap and it works. I do use it. I also use Qsymia, which is a combination of Topamax and phentermine. And that works well too. And it's considerably cheaper. You can do it generic where you do phentermine and Topamax separately, or you can actually prescribe Qsymia. And that way, that one, if you get it from a specialty pharmacy, it's about $100 a month if your insurance doesn't cover it. Qsymia works pretty well, but you know, some people will have side effects with that. You know, the Topamax, I have found sometimes people get real brain foggy, not everyone, and you don't know until you try it if you're going to be somebody who has bad side effects. But yeah, there are definitely other options. The GLP-1s are not the only option.
Yeah. Okay. So it's good to discuss your health history to know what might be better options for you to try. What do you feel like is most popular right now in your practice?
As far as weight loss medicines, Mounjaro.
Yeah.
Yeah, or Zepbound, same thing. Yeah. And I think, you know, the clinical trials show that it had the most weight loss and better than semaglutide. From experience, I feel that people have fewer side effects on Mounjaro, Zepbound compared to Wegovy, Ozempic.
Okay.
Everyone's different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So one of the questions that comes up often is like, well, okay, how long am I going to have to take this?
Yep.
And will I be able to maintain the results if I come off?
Yeah. So I always tell patients there is a chance you will have to be on this for life. And the reason is because obesity is a chronic disease. Not everybody has to be on these for life, but there is definitely a relatively large subset of the population that will need to stay on them. Because there are inflammatory changes in the hypothalamus, there are things that your body is doing to maintain your overweight or obesity. And much like high blood pressure, where, you know, if you see a patient for high blood pressure, you put them on a high blood pressure medicine, then their blood pressure comes down, you see them back in 3 months, you don't stop the blood pressure medicine because their blood pressure will just go back up. So for some people, yes. And the way that I look at that is it's better to be on one medicine and be a normal weight than to be not on that one medicine and be on a blood pressure medicine, a diabetes medicine, need a CPAP machine, be at higher risk for 14 cancers, including breast and uterine cancer, need a knee replacement. There's just so many more things that could go wrong when you're not a healthy weight. And one thing that I wanted to mention, that we always talk about these comorbid conditions and things and how bad they are for your health. Totally agree that being a healthy weight is really good to prevent all those other things. But I think that we sometimes don't focus enough on self-confidence and mental health.
Yeah. And
people who have struggled with obesity for their lives are much higher risk for depression. And so even just like getting like 5 pounds off or 10 pounds off can make you feel so much better and really improve your self-confidence, your moods, and not to mention your sex drive when you lose weight. That's another thing that 40-year-olds battle with, low sex drive. So I think it's that, just like we focus so much on chronic conditions, which are really important, but I think it's almost equally as important your mental health and how you feel about yourself.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So a couple of points there you made. You know, some antidepressants, well, we know that SSRIs and SNRIs can be utilized for vasomotor symptoms. So hot flashes and night sweats of menopause, right? That's a non-hormonal use. If there's a history of depression, in addition, you know, you want to probably steer towards a medication that, because some of the SSRIs are known to be weight positive, meaning you put on some weight, and some are better causing some weight gain. And so, you know, I think it's important to kind of make those considerations when you're talking about what antidepressant to start on. The second point is, whenever women put on weight and the body distribution changes and they don't feel at home in their body anymore, they are very self-conscious. And that oftentimes is a piece of their decreased sexual desire, because you, as you and I know, it's never just one issue, right?
Right.
It's usually a multitude of, like, well, I have less energy and I, you know, got brain fog, and it's timing, you know, because it's in the evening when I'm exhausted or I'm not sleeping well. And, you know, and it's how I feel about the way I look now. And so they don't want to get naked. They forget that their partners are typically delighted that they show up naked.
Right.
But, you know, our brain is our largest sex organ. So,
yes, that is so true. Yes. Yeah. There's so many things going on in a woman's life in her 40s that are just kind of disruptive. And it's not fair, you know, fluctuating hormone levels, high then low estrogen levels that affect your sleep, cause hot flashes, night sweats. Estrogen improves insulin sensitivity. So that's part of the reason that perimenopausal and menopausal women will develop insulin resistance. And like you mentioned, you know, as your estrogen levels decline, women, like where they deposit fat changes, and it goes right to our bellies, like right to a little belly, more of an apple shape than a pear shape.
Yeah.
And that can be really frustrating for a lot of women.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love that we touched on this, because your menopausal hormone therapy is a piece of that puzzle of weight loss, right? If a lot of women are concerned, like, am I going to gain weight on this? And they're equating it to like birth control. But I remind them that this is not synthetic. Oftentimes, you know, I'm starting with bioidentical FDA approved medications for menopausal hormone therapy or perimenopause therapy. And so typically, no, that's not an issue. Initially, you might experience some weight gain and bloating, but usually correcting that helps with your metabolism.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. It's just part of the whole big picture.
Right. Yeah. So we can't take these, you know, things into isolation. Like, we are a whole human being. Yeah, you're not a diagnosis. You're not just obese. You're not just, you know, hypoactive sexual desire disorder or endometriosis or whatever.
Right. It's very complex, very complex. So that's why
Yeah.
I think, you know, that's why I love organizations like ISWISH. And if anybody's listening and they want to find a provider who understands sexuality, because what I hear sometimes is patients come to me and they're like, oh, I brought up my low libido with my doctor and they just said, oh, you're just getting older, or oh, just drink some wine. No,
yes.
No, no, no. It is not that simple. And that's not a good answer.
Yes.
So if you're looking for somebody, a good website is iswish.org, and you can find providers. ISWISH has a fellowship, so providers that are trained in sexual medicine. So you can find somebody, because a happy, healthy sex life is incredibly important to your overall happiness, right? Like,
Yeah.
sex is food, shelter, and sex. That's what's important.
Basic human functions.
Your
Yeah.
the needs. So to throw it under the rug or be like, oh, you're just getting older, oh well, I don't like that answer at all. There are plenty of good things you can do, medicine and not medicine, to
Yeah.
help improve your drive.
Yeah, absolutely. So I saw a patient recently who was sent to me specifically for the low desire, and thought maybe it was the NuvaRing, because she had, it had came on during the time that she was using that for birth control. But she was also on several psychiatric medications. And I said, oh, well, these certainly could be impacting. Let's look at this. And I said, have you discussed this with your psychiatrist? He told her to have sex every day for 30 days, and that would increase her desire.
Nope. I've seen patients who've been told that before. And I'm like, no, because that just becomes a chore. And if you didn't want to do it
Yeah.
anyway, and you're making yourself do it,
Yeah, you're having duty
not going to
sex.
be a good experience. So one thing I heard somebody say once at a conference, and I just love this. This is, I say this all the time to my patients, is in order to want to have sex, it has to be
sex worth
wanting.
having. Yeah.
So
yeah.
like, if it's not good sex and you just did it because somebody told you to have sex every day, you're not going to want it anymore. So I feel
Right.
like sex is selfish and selfless. You do it for your partner, but you got to be selfish and get something out of it. So that in and of itself will help improve your drive, because you enjoy it. You're getting something out of it. Next time it's presented to you, you'll be like, hey, last time was pretty good. Yeah, let's do that again.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. Well, I can't remember how we got on sex, but you know,
Yeah.
I mean, it's
Yeah, we kind of took a little detour.
Yeah, we took a little
Okay.
detour. But you know, when we start losing weight, feeling better,
Yes.
feeling, you know, having more self-confidence, I think that that's
Yep.
how we got there. More self-confidence, that certainly leads to wanting more sex, or feeling more confident about having sex and showing up in that way.
Yes.
But yeah, don't forget your vaginal estrogen though, ladies.
Yep. 100% vaginal estrogen, incredibly low risk, like no risk, almost risk of
Yeah.
anything, with so many benefits to your
So many
sex
benefits.
life.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw a woman recently in her late 50s who said, I could see 1,000 dancing penis and would never care, like zero interest in sex, because it was painful.
Of course.
Gave her vaginal estrogen. 12 weeks later, she's like, new woman.
Yeah.
New woman.
That's just good judgment to not want to have sex if it hurts.
Right? I mean, our brains are smart.
But it's so easily treatable with that
Yeah.
vaginal estrogen or vaginal DHEA.
Yeah.
So, and it's incredibly low risk. And I think there are some women who are like, oh, but hormones cause breast cancer. Vaginal hormones
No.
do not increase your risk for breast cancer in the
And
slightest. Although, if you look at the package insert, it will say, do not use if you have breast cancer.
yes, but we both know that's a lie.
No, that's a lie. And that the FDA mandates this class labeling. So
Yep.
all estrogen products have to be labeled the same, but that does
Yeah.
not apply to your
Does not
vaginal
apply.
estrogen.
Does not apply. Okay, let's bring it back to obesity
Sure.
and finish up with, okay, how do we set our goals, and how are we monitoring our progress?
Yeah. So I think one of the important things about goals, like you've heard of SMART goals and everything, you want to set something. The way that I look at it is small goals that are measurable and obtainable. So, you know, I guess I come back to the whole exercise portion. You know, I ask my patients at the visit, tell me what are you going to do for exercise? And I always say, set the bar low. Because if you make some goal that's huge, it's so easy to not be able to get there. So baby steps, like, is it 5 minutes once a week? And usually I'll say something so low, they're like, oh, no, I can, you know, go a little bit more than that. But you definitely want to set goals in advance, and then do your best to stick to them. And as far as, you know, measurable and attainable, I'll usually bring my patients back in 6 weeks or so, and we just follow along. We follow their body composition, their percent body fat, their amount of muscle, their weight, their BMI, and we just go from there.
And so tweak their behaviors along the way to help
Yes.
reach their goal. But so
Right.
is it typically a personal goal or is it a health goal? Like, how do you come to the number for weight loss? Like,
Yeah.
I want to lose 20 pounds. I want to lose 50 pounds.
Right. So that is the $1 million question, because it's not always the number on the scale at all.
Right.
And sometimes patients come in, will be like, I want to lose 20 pounds. And really the way that I handle is we just set about going towards that goal, but you don't have to get to that goal. And I'll usually check in. How are you feeling now? You know, what do you feel about the weight that you're at? I don't hold people to a number, because sometimes I think we're like, oh, well, when I was 20 years old, I weighed X. And you're like, oh,
Right,
no,
right,
no,
right.
no, no.
This is not a 20-year-old body anymore.
No, and that's not attainable. And a lot of times it doesn't look good, right? Like, people can get too thin. Women in their 40s and 50s lose weight. It comes from the face.
Yeah.
They can get really gaunt looking. And it's not always healthy, you know. So I don't really hold people to a number. It's more about, how do you feel? Are you out of that obesity BMI? You know,
Right.
I feel like I get my patients to a normal BMI, if not even, like, I'm okay with like a 26 or a 27 BMI. And we all know that a BMI is fraught with problems. Like,
Oh,
it is
yeah.
not the end all and be all.
Yeah.
It's developed
That's
with white men. That's where
right.
the BMI came from. So
Right.
major
Right.
problem number one, but also a more muscular person will have a higher BMI.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think that that's why body composition is incredibly helpful, because you can see what percent body fat they've actually lost.
Yes. And I think patients like that. They like to see the trend.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
They love the data. They love
Yes.
the data. My patient who lost 20 pounds this week wanted to get on the InBody to scan to see her results. And she was so excited to see that she had maintained her muscle mass, but had dropped her percent body fat. Yeah, it means a lot.
Wonderful. Yeah. And I have to say, like, as a physician, I love helping women lose weight because they feel so good.
Yeah.
I feel like I've made such a difference, and I
Yeah.
love that. I
Yeah.
love helping women lose weight.
Yeah. And so I think that the work that we're doing is so incredibly important for women in midlife. It's really fun. Like, I have a patient who just went on a 3-week European trip, and she said, I never would have done that before. But because she got on her hormone therapy, and then we started working on weight loss, and she was like, I have so much more energy and drive for life. You know, I'm not just like a blob, can't get off the couch anymore. You know, she's feeling so good. I mean, it's just really remarkable. We want you to thrive in this life.
Yes. And energy, actually, you know, I see a lot of women who come in and they say, I have no energy in the perimenopause and menopause. And part of that is, like, if you're waking up with hot flashes, night sweats, and you're not.
Yes, you're not getting solid sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you correct that and they're really, and, you know, exhausted, weight loss, if you know, a person goes from obesity to overweight to normal weight, their energy levels go up so much.
Yeah.
So much. So, yeah, I think that's really, really important.
Yeah. Well, thank you for drawing attention to this and educating us today on what our different options are for weight loss. This is a really meaningful conversation for women. Until next week, be well.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Carolyn. It was fun.
Thank you for joining me on Sky Women's Health Podcast. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to stay up to date with our latest content. This episode is proudly sponsored by Sky Women's Health, your go-to destination for midlife gynecology in DFW, specializing in perimenopause, menopause care, sexual medicine, And a unique thing we offer is osteopathic manipulative treatment for pregnant and postpartum patients. While we are nobody's primary OB, we collaborate with your OB to provide you comfort through your pregnancy. Stay tuned for more empowering discussions. Until next time, be well.